Welcome to the Seven Figure Leaders podcast. This podcast was created to celebrate the success stories of seven-figure business owners, giving them a platform to share their insights and lessons learned in order to inspire other business owners. As well as that, it's an opportunity to build new connections. So if you're a seven-figure business owner or someone who works with seven-figure business owners, and you're looking for introductions to potential stakeholders, strategic partners, and clients, I'd love to hear from you or have you on as a guest and see if I can help make those connections for you. Just go to synergycfosolutions.co. That's synergycfosolutions.co and click podcast. And there you'll find the link to apply. Welcome. And today we've got Jonathan Lee from the Jonathan Lee Network, which is a law firm specializing in advising businesses, startups, mature companies, and public companies. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah, pleasure to be on here.
So best place to start, why don't you give a little bit of an overview of your background and the business that you run?
Yeah, sure. So my background, very briefly, but I trained and qualified at one of the bigger firms in London in the city, worked in the city at larger firms for a few more years, then found myself working at regional firms and a small firm before I thought, right, that's it, I want to do my own thing. Discovered it was not entirely straightforward to set up your own regulated firm from scratch. Then I discovered the ability to work as a consultant system, whereby you work under the umbrella of another law firm, but you build your own practice, your own client base on a fee share basis, which I did for a few years, and then got to the point in 2019 where I thought, okay, great. Well, we're now, in order to grow our revenue, we know what we're doing works. I've got employees. Let's make the next move and become a regulated firm in our own right. Therefore, I can employ solicitors, offer training contracts, get our own consultant solicitors, and then develop our own business, which we've been doing since 2019 now.
Okay, brilliant. And so what exactly do you help your clients with, and what sort of clients do you work with? I know I mentioned at the beginning, but what are the kind of the problems that you help them with?
All sorts now. So we are very much full service, but within that we have a reputation. We're known for doing certain things a lot more than others. So while we can do residential conveyancing and wills and probate, etc., which we'd love to do more of, we don't have the resources to do too much of it. We're looking for people to join us in that respect. But other than that, what we really focus on is owner-managed businesses, whether it's a technology startup, mature family-owned business. We have done some work for public companies, but mostly it's all private limited companies. And whatever the legal needs, an entrepreneur, an owner, manager, director may need, we cover. And principally within that, it's corporate, commercial, in the very general sense, anything advisory, transactional, etc., as well as, second to that, the litigation dispute side. So anything contentious, sometimes there's a bit of an element of contentious work alongside the transactional work, but invariably they're sort of one and the other. So we advise on a lot of disputes, and that could be litigation going through the court process. Not pleasant, but for whatever reason, sometimes that's the way you go. Other than that, we have lots of mediation meetings and settlement, negotiated settlements, etc., outside of the court process, as it were.
Okay. So I think it's fair to say that every business is going to need a lawyer at some point, especially as they're looking to exit, for example. You mentioned before shareholder agreements, disputes, share purchase agreements. Are there any examples that you can run through? Obviously, you can remove names of businesses just to help our audience understand whether and how what you do might fit into anything that they need.
In terms of the corporate advisory transactional work we do, some of the bigger fees relate to where there's a deal and there's money involved, and tends to, not always, some things sometimes the money can be a lot of money involved, but the issue is very simple and the fees very low. But invariably, if there's more money at stake, there's more complexity, there's more people involved, there's more issues to resolve, etc. So in the corporate side, we advise on a lot of technology startups raising money. So there's the successive investor rounds, different investors trying to balance the needs and of all these different people and different investors involved as the company gets bigger and raises more money. Within that, you've got the shareholders agreement and the articles of association that can go through many changes and involve a lot of negotiations and a subscription agreement that regulates and governs each investment round. There can also be lots of sort of side issues that interrelate, like share schemes and making sure there's no sort of compliance issues if people are, for example, trying to claim investors' EIS tax relief, and that might conflict with growth share scheme, for example, you're trying to offer people. So you have to sort of be experienced, aware of all the issues as they connect to one another at any one time. So that's on the sort of more early stage company side where we advise on things. So that an example could be is a company that we've advised on since the start, which has raised, can't put a figure on it, but millions of pounds of investment, but from a whole bunch of different investors, and then more later on sort of institutional investors are putting in bigger amounts of money, and there's a lot of work to do to make sure you get all the detail right and the cap table is managed, and you know how all the different previous deals interrelate and what you need to comply with when you're raising further money. So that's that side. And then more mature companies that can, we have a whole wide range of different companies that might come to us, whether existing clients or referrals from accountants or people we know in our local business community. We advise on mostly a whole range of small different M&A mergers and acquisitions type deals. So on one we have at the moment is the sale of an established hair salon, typical kind of thing where it's a high street shop and there's the property side involved and the landlord you're dealing with, as well as the buyer and an entrepreneur and owner who's owned it for a number of years and is looking for, hopefully, fingers crossed, a nice clean exit. Not that the legal issues, the legal process won't go on too long, but they'll get a nice capital amount from their endeavors when they come to exit. And it might be their only business, or they might have several businesses. But regardless, it's a key process and a very important time for them. So it's rewarding for us. Invariably, fingers crossed, we get good feedback and happy clients, and then also because it's tends to last a little bit of time, even the short quick ones are about a month's worth of legal work, or sometimes shorter, but a good fee as a result for the law firm. So we like doing absolutely everything, all the small things, but in order to, as well as the bigger things obviously, but in order to be economical and viable as a business, particularly as a heavily regulated law firm where there's so much compliance and just setting up a file, you need enough of the bigger things, the bigger matters, to make it viable to run a law firm effectively. So all the small things are great because they allow you to keep clients happy and they lead to other things, but you also need the right balance with some bigger things alongside them as well.
Brilliant. And so if we could just go a level deeper, What are the biggest kind of mistakes that you see business owners making, whether it is close to that sale process or, not having a shareholder agreement in place? And perhaps if we could get into some detail about some of the big mistakes that you've seen that might make the listeners realize that they need to kind of have a chat with someone like you to get the right provision.
I mean, it's not just something that comes to mind because it relates to a couple of matters we're working on at the moment where one of our niches is shareholder director disputes. And it's not necessarily a mistake because some companies can be incredibly successful. And even though we might be advising one party against the other, it is because of the dynamic and the different strengths of the two. Often it's two co-founders or three, but we often see disputes between two co-founders. And often there's one dominant personality. And one is a very majority and one is more the minority shareholder. It's rare that you get completely 50-50, but just because often it seems one is more the driving force than the other, even though as an outsider you think, well, this business is successful because it's both of you and you've both brought different strengths, you've both taken on different roles within the business, I always kind of feel, and maybe I'm biased because I'm sort of the sole founder owner of my own company, and maybe because I've seen so many of these examples over the years, I decided to do it my own thing rather than go into business with someone else at the outset. They always say, oh, I wish I just started on my own rather than go into business with my friend or colleague or whoever it was. whether that's the right thing or not, I don't know. Whether you could argue maybe they wouldn't be successful as financially, but also it's maybe not so much that. It's maybe just they're having the lack of stress and conflict, and the ability just to follow their own path, make their own decisions, and take more responsibility for running their business without having a co-founder that they don't necessarily, that they're having trouble reconciling differences with, let's say. But that's only a certain sort of, you know, there are lots of examples of very successful businesses where there is never a fallout, or you never hear of it anyway. But so regardless of that, maybe think a bit more about whether you could actually start the business yourself rather than someone else. But if you do go into business with someone else, of course, you always hear this, but so often we don't see it. You just need a very good, just well-considered shareholders agreement that makes it very clear what happens in certain scenarios. If somebody's not that interested, somebody goes on to do something else or whatever it might, doesn't meet certain performance criteria, just a few things that you easily objective criteria that you can measure, and clear processes to follow that if there is some kind of deadlock dispute, and a mechanism for one to buy out the other, or whatever it is for people to go their own separate ways. Because otherwise, if there is a bit of conflict, or people aren't getting on, or one decides to do something completely different, it can create a whole load of legal issues that aren't easy to resolve unless there's something that you've actually agreed in contract in a shareholders agreement between you at the outset. So my advice is always, like, think twice. Could you do this business yourself rather than go to business with someone else? And if you do decide, okay, I want to go into business with my colleague, my mate, or whoever it is, it is so tempting not to, but just make sure that you go to someone who knows what they're doing, you get some help, you spend some time putting together a good contract, shareholders agreement that governs the relationship between you and your co-founder.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so shifting gears slightly. So you obviously went from the corporate world where you had a job to consulting into then starting your own business. Perhaps we could dive into some of what you went through there and the journey that you've been on as a business owner.
So I think it's as a business owner, there's no manual, or no, you can have different mentors and people who give you advice along the way, and you try and seek out those people all the time. And form sort of peer groups of people that you can learn from at the time, depending on the size of your business. But it's very much, you just kind of got to back yourself and hope that you work it out as you go along, kind of thing. So for me, it was like thinking back to when I was an employee, even when I was junior, and some quite often frustrated with the decisions that are being made, and thinking, well, if I had the ability to make decisions, I would do this or do that differently, or adopt that technology, or handle that sensitive matter a bit more different, in a different way that wouldn't create so many issues. But you never know when until you're in that position what you're going to do and how well you're going to be. So it's just having self-belief and confidence. Obviously, I think you need that. And then things obviously change from the beginning when you're more like an independent person, a freelancer, because I had this sort of freelancer lifestyle as a consultant for a number of years, which is great. And I think that's different skills base you need to do that. And it's a different environment to then going to when you do employ people and you grow a team of employees and consultant. In this case, I've got contractors, consultants, solicitors. Contractors, consultants, solicitors are a different kettle of fish, many ways easier to manage. But when actually employing people is kind of where I think where the magic happens, but where there's a whole load of issues that come with that. And it's never easy. It's never straightforward. And you just have to sort of learn as you go along. And so, yeah, I feel like I've got almost like a degree in that, which I hadn't, you know, I might have felt like I could do a good job beforehand, but I definitely couldn't until I got the experience and learnt from my mistakes and issues as they go on. So I think I'm patient to a degree and quiet and considerate beforehand anyway, but maybe a lot more so now, that it's just never worth it. So, you know, no matter how frustrating people and situations can be, you always just have to maintain a kind of dispassionate, relaxed, don't start to get angry about anything, because invariably you're creating a bad situation, and you always just need to let things happen, consider them and think very, very carefully and get advice from different people before you then actually start to say anything or make a decision. That's sort of something I've, in particular, that I've learned over the years that, you've just got to really just stay calm and focus and really wait before you say anything or do anything, because invariably the knee-jerk reaction isn't often the right thing to do. And hiring people and firing people is just so time-consuming, so expensive. You kind of have to overlook some things that that you don't find great. And and also equally, sometimes you have to make the decision to let people go quite quickly. Otherwise, you waste a lot of time and money continuing to employ people when they're not quite right for the business.
And did you bootstrap the whole thing?
Yeah. So we've sort of grown organically, as it were, and reinvested cash flow. Even if I had the money, I wouldn't have wanted to do a regulated firm from scratch, because my fear was, oh, what happens if it all goes wrong? And then all the money I had to put front load into the beginning would be lost in a complete waste. So that's the attraction of working as a consultant. So this, for me, at the outset, it's like, all I need to do is, well, I didn't need to buy anything, but I bought a new laptop and I had a home office where I used to work in Southeast London near Peckham. Great, loved it, very enjoyable, made some great connections, did a lot of networking that helped business build the business and get my own client base of working at the beginning. And then it just naturally grew, and I reinvested some of the money I made into a website, which didn't cost a lot of money, but it allowed me to generate more work as a result. As I say, it was the freelance lifestyle, which was a different lifestyle from employing people, but I very much enjoyed it. I didn't want to readily let that go. So I waited a few years before I got fed up of turning work away and thought, well, how do I get out of this? The only way to go forwards is to get start as a regulated firm, employ people. And then that's got a whole new different challenge, which on the whole, I've enjoyed. I wouldn't want to go back. So before, as a consultant, I never left home. I wouldn't even get dressed in the mornings. Whereas now I'm very much in the office every day. I couldn't work otherwise because, you know, just the volume of things I have to deal with, I sort of need to be able to speak to people in the office environment now.
Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. And so in those early days, just after you got regulated and you brought people on payroll, how did you juggle being able to make payroll with bringing in enough work?
I think it would have worked even if I'd made a decision much earlier to sort of say, well, I've had enough of consultant solicitors, let's get an office and employ people. It would have worked. It's quite a big jump up and a lot of extra risk and responsibility. Plus, I was very happy being a freelancer. So, but also I paid too much attention to all the nightmare stories people tell me, like friends who'd made that jump and employing people. I was like, oh God, you know, yeah, thank God I don't have to deal with that. I don't want to do that. Da, 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 da. But it is hard work, but ultimately it's a challenge I enjoy as well. But I think because we then, by the time we did get a little office, employ people, there was such a volume of work coming in. And as I say, I was turning work away that wasn't a problem, the work coming in. It was just to be able to resource it and train a couple of juniors up to increasingly get more useful and have a... first hire was actually a qualified solicitor that I couldn't hire them directly because I was a consultant. So they had to be employed by the firm I consulted through. And then I paid their employment costs plus VAT, which was supply of labor, supply of service, to that consultancy firm so that they could work with me exclusively, and that boosted my revenue. And then I could afford to pay their salary in advance to the consultancy. So it was a bit of a complex workaround, but... anyway, you have to hold your nerve. Now that I remember, it was, even though I say there was a lot of work coming in, I'd actually been, when I made the decision to employ two people, but then my dad passed away and I had to turn all work away and focus on that. Then it came to January. I was like, well, I've just got to get on with things. And they were due to start work with me in January. So things were a lot slower than they otherwise would be because I've been out of work I've been turning work away for 3 months. It took a little while to build up, but yeah, I think you just have to hold your nerve and hope people just, as long as people turn up to work every day and find a way to get busy, then eventually enough stuff will happen, enough money will come in, and that you can pay the bills. But yeah, it was that first hire, two hires. The first 6 months was actually very challenging because of that scenario. And then as soon as it sort of clicked, then we got another hire, and then it just sort of built momentum from there. So I think that's another key thing, is like, you've always got to try and be on the front foot. You've always been looking for that next hire, particularly getting a mixed balance of juniors, senior people. Otherwise, if you kind of think that you've got to cut costs or you stay the same level, then things start to go backwards, because then people will leave anyway. And then, you know, the clients won't think you're resourcing the work well enough. You're not doing things quickly enough to a good enough level, because you haven't got enough juniors to help you get stuff done quicker. So you've always got to, always think about hiring and taking the next step, I think.
Definitely. And so is it you who manages all the new business? Are you the one out there getting your face out there, going to events and all that stuff? Or even your team that do that now?
Yeah, we all share it around, but still it's a lot of it is sort of my role, although I do lots of other things as well. So it's great, you know, I get invited to really good events where people want me to attend. Sometimes I can't, someone else goes, but otherwise it's great to be able to go along myself. We've got a great internal marketing team as well as external marketing consultants that helps inquiries coming through the website and social media, etc., as well as from our referral sources. I still manage a lot of that as it comes in, and decide where those leads go and set up the processes from there. But I'm trying to get me away from doing that now, and sort of AI tools help that a lot, where we can standardize the processes and languages a lot. And AI even knows which solicitor is best to deal with whatever inquiry comes in now, which is helpful. So I'm just started trying to offload that role for me, and then more our admin team and business development team effectively can start to do that.
Brilliant. So your in terms of inbound leads or new business, you are largely dependent on the website and then the events that you go to meet new people, and referral partners. Those are the main channels.
Yeah, and an existing client base. And referral partners like accountants. A good thing came in this morning that was somebody emailed through the website, but they said that, oh, you were recommended to me by my accountant, who we know locally, as well as someone else we know locally. So quite often it's particularly local connections. It's a number of different touch points that leads them to get in touch. But then also the website is really key. Like we always get some of our best work comes from people who just read something on the website. They've come through Google or now like ChatGPT or AI tool or something, and what you've written really resonates. I found it insightful. It relates to my scenario. I've looked around your website a bit more. I've seen that you've got Google reviews, da 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 da, and they've bothered to then put in can I have a 20-minute call or fix the appointment if they just want some advice there and then. We've got no connection with those people beforehand very often. But even though there's a low trust level in that respect, we're quite often able to get some decent work as a result of a lead coming in that way.
Brilliant. And so what's next for the business, and what are your plans going forward?
We're doing a lot of technology. So we had a great year in 2023 when our revenue almost doubled. And as soon as it did, and we made some decisions, positive decisions, it then started to go down a bit. So that caused me to like really reassess things and to look at every single aspect. What can we do with technology to improve things? So all our systems have improved. Part of that is embracing AI and using enterprise level ChatGPT, Google Gemini accounts in every single thing we do, admin, legal work, etc., which has massively improved the quality of our work and responsiveness. I think we've got a nice platform now. We're looking to hire new people. Suddenly we've increased the rate of employing new people. We've got new people starting like every month now. Fingers crossed we can keep that momentum going. New inquiries are coming through at a decent rate now as well, after having that bit of a lull. And then we're really looking for new consultant solicitors. So they've been difficult to find, people, solicitors who want to leave employment or to work on a self-employed basis. But we're doing more with marketing campaigns, etc., to try and find those people who are at the right point of their career where it makes sense to have a discussion about, hey, what about, rather than these other virtual firms, you could join us as a consultant solicitor. We provide all the support, admin, et cetera, accounts. We work under our umbrella with the insurance provided, et cetera. But if you've got your own client base, you can generate your own work, then you get a pretty decent fee share arrangement. And also you can then do like I did, you can employ people and still work under umbrella. So effectively grow your own legal business and revenue and profit without having the hassle of running your own regulated firm. So which are trying to sell that and to people and try and find the right candidates to join us as consultant solicitors as well.
Okay, perfect. So there's quite a few people who might be interested in reaching out to you there then. We'll make it very easy for anyone to contact you. We'll put your website and LinkedIn in the show notes. Any business owners who'd like to have a chat with Jonathan, obviously reach out. But then also lawyers who are potentially looking at starting their own consulting under your umbrella.
Yes.
Good intro to you as well. Thank you very much for coming on as a guest. Much appreciated.
Thank you for having me.
And wishing you and the business all the best.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot, Tom. All the best to you. Have a great week ahead.
You too.
Yes.
Thanks for listening. As I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, this podcast was created to celebrate the success stories of seven-figure business owners, giving them a platform to share their insights and lessons learned in order to inspire other business owners. As well as that, it's an opportunity to build new connections. So if you're a seven-figure business owner or someone who works with seven-figure business owners and you're looking for introductions to potential stakeholders, strategic partners, and clients, I'd love to hear from you or have you on as a guest and see if I can help make those connections for you. Just go to synergycfosolutions.co. That's synergycfosolutions.co and click podcast. On that page, you'll find the link to apply.